And welcome back to MTG Eternities. I'm your host, Carl. Now, I'm sorry for being gone for a few weeks. A lot of things have come up in my personal life, mainly school. This is my last year in college, at least for my bachelor's degree, so a lot of things are amped up. I'm kind of having to focus and use a lot of my extra time for college because, you know, I'm paying all this money for it, and I don't want to have to go back and retake classes and stuff that gets expensive. So for the time being, until we hit a break in my school year or till summer comes around, these are probably going to be whenever I get time. And some may be excited about that. Some may be slightly disappointed about that. But I'm going to try to keep as regular as possible. I do post on Twitter frequently. So if you do like my opinions or you want to get in contact with me, please follow me on Twitter at MTG Eternities. My YouTube channel, again, kind of coincides with my podcast. I'll only be uploading when I go to, like, GPs or when I do a podcast. So the YouTube channel is kind of slow, more or less. But if you still want to go there, I'd be more than happy to have you. You can find me at MTG Eternities on YouTube. So it shouldn't be that hard to find me. But that being said, a lot of stuff has happened within the last week, namely. And I kind of want to talk about that, and then I also want to talk about the few tournaments I missed. We'll kind of catch up there. But first and foremost, obviously, I want to start off by talking about the modern unbans. The unbans, of course, being Jace the Mind Sculptor and Bloodbraid Elf. Now, I know I'm personally behind the ball on these unbans. I've done my research when it comes to these. But for the most part, I'm sure you guys have already listened to other podcasts or have gotten your opinions from Star City Games articles or Channel Fireball articles or other YouTubers who've accumulated some sort of opinion about this card. Obviously, I want to throw my two cents in. I was active in Magic at the time that both these cards were in Standard. So having a first-hand experience, it does help me get some sort of clarity, especially around these two cards. The deck I was playing, I was still kind of green at the time in competitive Magic, but I was playing mono-red goblins, utilizing Burn at the time. And that was Zendikar Goblins with Zendikar Fetches, and then we had Lightning Bolt, Searing Blaze, stuff like that in Standard. And so it was definitely a borderline deck when it came down to it. I never really kept track of what tier that was back in the day. I was just excited to be playing competitive. But honestly, if I had to put that deck down, it'd probably be around a tier 1.5, borderline tier 1. And I know that's my own personal opinion, but this is me remembering the meta from back in the day. So with that in mind, I did play against Jace the Mind Sculptor and Bloodbraid Elf quite often, and I have actually managed to play with both in the past. Before Extended was a thing, I played both of these cards in EDH, or I've played with both of these cards when rotations happened or something to that extent. And so the first card I actually kind of want to hit is Jace the Mind Sculptor. Where that would fit in Modern, I think we've kind of narrowed it down to two different decks, and I'm probably not going to say anything that you guys haven't already thought of. But I think that he can fit into a blue-white control list or into a brand new Miracles deck list. Now, with blue-white control, Jace the Mind Sculptor kind of takes up the four-drop slot. You're going to want to have your Supreme Verdicts in there. You're going to want to have your Settle the Wreckages in there, whatever you're utilizing in that spot. But what it does take out is, in blue-white control, you do lose your Jace Architect of Thought over this, and you do lose... If you're playing the Gideon version, you're going to lose your more than likely Gideon 4-drop from Zendikar, Gideon ally of Zendikar out of this. And arguably, that's a pretty good pick. Either way, you're not losing a heck of a lot. In fact, it can be argued that you're going to make an upgrade to this. But that being said, I still think that this is more than likely the best spot for it. Now, the other flex spot is, of course, Miracles. Now, there has never been a Miracles deck in Modern, and people are thinking that because Opt exists, because Serum Vision exists, because the new Augur exists, the 4-drop Augur that brainstorms out of Ixalan exists, plus this guy, it's going to enable Miracles to the extent of which where Miracles can be a thing in Modern. And that is something that I would like to see. I would like to see some sort of Miracles kind of make its way in. And I don't know if that would necessarily push the blue-white control deck out of Modern that we currently have. If you're not familiar with Miracles because you don't play Legacy or you didn't play at the time, what Miracles are, they're a type card, every color had it except black, where you look at the top card of the deck before drawing it. It'll have a ability called Miracle on it. So one of the more common ones was Entreat the Angels. Entreat the Angels reads white XX, and you put into play X Angels where X is the amount of mana you pay into it. But if you were to miracle it, the cost is significantly reduced and you can put out even more angels into play. Now, you have to reveal the miracle before drawing it. If you draw the miracle without using it and goes to your hand, you can't use the miracle anymore. So it's a very niche mechanic, it's a very powerful mechanic, and it's a very top deck heavy mechanic. Already we're starting to see spikes in Terminus, in Entreat the Angels, and in Temporal Mastery when it comes to Miracles. So Blue-White Miracles is definitely the deck that people are going to try to put Jace in. I will make a quick mention, of course. Jace went from being a $60 card, still pricey, to now being a $140 card in Modern. I don't know about you guys, but this seems kind of suspect. I know that there are some people out there who say that they unban Jace so they could sell M25. That might be the case to make M25 sell a little bit more. But at the same time, I personally feel like Jace is unban worthy. I think, yes, it's an impressive card, but at the same time, it's in a situation where you can fight back against it. It's not like it's back in the standard of its time with Stoneforge Mystic, and you're just controlling the board with Stoneforge Mystic, Jace, and Squadron Ox. It's not like that. In this modern meta, that deck doesn't quite exist. So now you're seeing just a Blue-White Miracles list, and you're seeing a Blue-White Control list utilizing Jace, and I would love to see where this will eventually take us. Moving on to Jace's eternal rival, quote-unquote, is Bloodbraid Elf. Now, primary reason why they released Bloodbraid Elf from the modern ban list was because it's a fair card in this modern meta. Now, the secondary reason is, as I stated before, it's Jace's eternal rival. If you ever played Standard at that time, and somebody slapped down a Jace, if they had Bloodbraid Elf, for the sheer fact that Bloodbraid Elf can cascade and hit something and put it into play, and then swing for four, possibly either killing Jace or lowering Jace down to one, that's why Bloodbraid Elf is considered Jace's eternal rival, because it was a way to deal with Jace. So they unbanned a way to deal with Jace and allowed it to go back to Modern. Now the question remains, where will you see Bloodbraid Elf in Modern? Well, the first place that you're going to see it is Jund. The downside of which is Jund has quite a bit of 4-drops in its slot right now that this card has to compete with. You have to compete with Huntmaster of the Fells, you have to compete with Kalidus, you have to compete with Gonti, and some Jund lists are still even using Olivia Baldarin. All four of those cards are powerful in their own aspect, so it can be argued that Bloodbraid Elf is now in that 4-drop position fighting amongst these cards. And honestly, I think it'll outbeat Gonti and I think it'll outbeat Olivia. I think the two primary cards that it actually has to worry about are Huntmaster of the Fells and Kalidus. Now, there was a point of which where Huntmaster of the Fells and Bloodbraid Elf kind of coincided, and I mean, it was a brief minute. So it's hard to say which one of these two cards is better. And Kalidus obviously is a 3-4 with lifelink, and it's very specific. Whenever cards could die, it's going to get exiled, and you're going to have something come in as a 2-2 zombie, or it's going to poop out 2-2 zombies and then potentially make itself stronger. So Kalidus is kind of like its own niche. You might see Kalidus move to the sideboard and Huntmaster, and Bloodbraid Elf kind of take up the 4-drop slot. Bloodbraid Elf does something quite similar to Huntmaster, where Huntmaster poops out a Wolf token and gains you 2 life. Bloodbraid Elf cascades and gets you a 3 or less spell. And with the cascading ability, even though it's not a land, there's a lot of potential of what you can cascade into. There are 2 3-drop lilies right now that Bloodbraid Elf can cascade into, which are arguably the best value cards. There's a multitude of kill spells, a multitude of hand disruptions. Colligan's Command is another great card for this card to hit, and that's all within Jund's line. So it's just a matter of Jund list tinkering around, finding out how many Huntmaster of the Fells they want to run, if they even want to run that, rather than Bloodbraid Elf. Because Bloodbraid Elf is a 2-for-1, potentially, as is Huntmaster of the Fells. So I think you're going to see a lot of discrepancy. I honestly think that Kalidus might move his way to the side, but I could be wrong. Another spot that you're going to see Bloodbraid Elf, of course, is you're going to see it in Living End. And I don't know if the deck's going to want it as a 3-of, 2-of, or something like that. But the card itself is just another cascade trigger. So if for whatever reason, they lose their cascades and they can no longer cast Living End, this card will give them an additional cascade card to help them cascade into Living End. Now, with that in mind, they're not going to be able to run a lot of cyclers that are 3 or less instead, so it might bump up the curve. But the deck has been boosted with Amonkhet, with all the cards that have cycle from there. I think we'll see a lot of potential. And the deck's also boosted up with Hollowed One. It's another card that people may or may not be playing. Finally, the last place that I think Bloodbraid Elf might make back into Zoolas. And if you're not familiar with Zoo, it's just really efficient creatures that either have haste or have ETB effects that are super value or are just really big. So the deck runs, example, like Wild Nacatl, Voice of Resurgence, Goblin Guide, Quasali Pride Mage. All those cards are just great value or come into play and do something or just are really big. And you might see Bloodbraid Elf make it into the list because it's able to cascade and put out another threat. So if it's able to cascade and, let's say, bump into a Goblin Bushwhacker or something to that equivalence, it might be able to bump up the field and swing or do other things. So that might be another flex spot for Bloodbraid Elf. Now, I'm sure there are a lot of other places for Bloodbraid Elf to go, but I do want to mention, just like Jace, there was a huge spike with Bloodbraid Elf. It went from being a $2 uncommon to being a $8 uncommon. So if you have a multitude of them in your binder, you've just made a little bit of money. The same thing for Jace, obviously. And it's, again, specking. I don't think we'll see a proper list come out, per se, for the next couple of weeks. I think you're going to see a lot of people tinkering around with these two cards, and we may see them come in on the next Modern Tournament Top 8, but I think it's still a flex spot, and I think you won't see a solidified list for at least 2 weeks. It is funny, though, that they unbanned these cards right after the Pro Tour happened, and I know they do that specifically for a reason, but I just think that they're probably a lot of pro players at the Pro Tour thinking, you guys could have announced this a bit sooner. I wanted to play with these cards, not with this other deck that I was playing. And so I think it is kind of funny that they released these two powerhouse cards together. And again, it's only natural as well that they both be released together. And so long as Stoneforge Mystic remains on the ban list, I don't think we'll have a huge issue with Jace. If Cobblade becomes a thing, we might have to see some alterations to some ban lists. And there are already people saying, well, we should ban Jace just like we did with Golgari Troll or reban something. And I think you need to test the waters here. Obviously, they want people to buy M25. That's probably the primary reason why they unban Jace. But at the same token, I do think it's one of those situations where you're going to have to test and see how Jace does in Modern. If Jace starts taking up 4 or 5 slots and just because of Jace, then yeah, Jace might need a ban. But if Jace only appears on the top 8 list once, and he's just somewhere in the top 8, and it's not consistently at first place or something, he might be here to stay, folks. Jace is not, and I'm saying this now, Jace is not as powerful as he once was in Standard. We've gotten a whole lot more power since then. And Jace was kind of still a relatively new Planeswalker. You gotta remember that Planeswalkers came out with the Llanowar block. And so going into Llanowar, you have Shards of Alara, you have Mirrodin, you then have the Zendikar block. So Jace is still a relatively new Planeswalker, and this is still with core sets also having Planeswalkers as well. Jace was a test of the waters. And was it a good test for that Standard time? No. But is it a good test for Legacy and possibly a good test for Modern? I think it's worth a try. And worst comes to worst, we ban Jace in Modern, and then, oh well. People are out a lot of money. But that's kind of what the M25 reprints are for. Now they have a card for Legacy if they have it. Now they have a card to trade if they need to have it. And we gave Jace a try. We gave Jace a second chance at life. And if it turns out he's too powerful, then he can stay in Legacy. But if it turns out he's just right for the format and gives Blue the power boost it needs, then I think people will find that he is here to stay. The next topic I kind of want to hit are the 4 Modern big events that happened over the last couple of weeks. So we had Star City Games Philadelphia, we had the Pro Tour Rivals of Ixalan, we had the CML 10 Modern, and we had GP Toronto, all within the last couple of weeks. So the first one I want to hit is SCG Philadelphia, where we had a couple of irregularities. The top 8 lists starting first and ending in 8th are 1st place Humans, 2nd place Twin Foretold Vengeance, 3rd place Creature Toolbox, 4th place Blue-Red Storm, 5th place Affinity, 6th place Modern Red Control, 7th place Dredge, and 8th place Eldrazi Tron. Quickly, I want to kind of touch on 2 decks. The first deck I want to touch on is Twin Foretold Vengeance. Now, I'm not going to go over the whole deck list, again, sheer sake that I don't have that much time at the moment, but instead I kind of want to go over some small details. So, purpose of Twin Foretold Vengeance is kind of a triple combo deck. So it uses Faithless Looting and Izzet Charm as its primary means of drawing and discarding. So it's going to draw 2 cards and pitch 2 cards. It's trying to pitch Grizzlebrand from the hand into the grave. Once they do, they're able to recur it with Goyo's Vengeance and then draw a ton more and then swing at the opponent for 7. If they need to, they can play a As Foretold and also hard cast Grizzlebrand eventually. Now, you're talking real late game on that one, but it is a distinct possibility that the game does go late. Finally, they're also utilizing a twin combo with Kiki-Jiki and Deceiver Exarch. So as you can see, it's kind of reminiscent of a Legacy deck, and the best Legacy deck I can compare this to is my own experience with Omniscience, Sneak Attack, or just Omnishow. Sneak Attack is going to put a card from your hand into the battlefield, have it have haste, you're going to be able to utilize its effects, and swing for X. You kind of see that with Goyo's Vengeance. You also have it being able to just put cards into play, and you kind of see that with As Foretold. Now, Splinter Twin does not make it into Legacy. The card is not that good in Legacy. There are just too many ways to disrupt it. But you do see Kiki-Jiki and Deceiver Exarch kind of being reminiscent of arguably what is one of the most powerful modern decks of all time, Splinter Twin. And because it's able to do this, and because it's able to do a kind of tri-prong combo attack, your opponent doesn't necessarily know what to do or where to go or what combo pieces to disrupt. So the deck in itself as a whole can be very good. And as you see, it got to the second place finish at the SCG Philadelphia. So hats off to that player. The other deck I want to touch at SCG Philadelphia is Mono Red Control. So that's usually something you don't hear, Control and Mono Red in the same sentence. But the purpose of Mono Red is to get out a Chalice of the Void, Blood Moon, Ensnaring Bridge, or Magus of the Moon, arguably on turn 1, if not turn 2, maybe turn 3 at the latest, so you could start running down your opponent. So they're running an assortment of rituals, they're running an assortment of free mana to put these 3-drop cards out on turn 2 or on turn 1 and help control the field. And from there, their wins are with either Koth, or they're winning with Chandra, Torch of Defiance, or they're winning with Rabble Master for just a massive amount of damage. And so now your opponent has to deal with this Magus or this Blood Moon or Ensnaring Bridge. They're not really able to do much, or even Chalice, and they're not able to do much. The downside of Chalice being in that sort of deck is you could only really say Chalice on 1. You can't say Chalice on 2 because then you disrupt your own rituals, and saying Chalice on 3 arguably destroys your deck. So you're kind of restricted to doing Chalice on 1, maybe Chalice on 2. That's a very rough spot. And I actually quickly want to mention this. I want to come back to this Mono Red Control list later. I will be talking about GP Houston briefly at the end of this cast, and I think you guys will find it relatively interesting when I bring back Mono Red Control. The next tournament I want to hit is the Pro Tour Rivals of Ixalan. So again, just as before, 1st through 8th, Lantern Control in 1st place, Mardu Pyromancer in 2nd, Hollowed One in 3rd, Blue Red Pyromancer in 4th, Abzan in 5th, Humans in 6th and 7th, and Traverse Shadow in 8th. Now, when Lantern Control took 1st place, a lot of people thought something was going to get banned out of it. And I knew something was not going to get banned out of it, folks. And here, I know Lantern Control is slow. Here's the thing, it wins. And because of the fact that it wins in a relatively good amount of time, unless you're seeing two Lantern players go up against each other, then it's just a matter of attrition. It's arguably just like a high tide matchup in Legacy at that point. But going back to why Lantern Control would not see a ban, it only placed in one spot on that top 8 list. If you saw multiple Lantern Controls place, then you might arguably see a ban. And yes, Lantern Control has been making headway in Modern, but you don't see it in multiple spots in the top 8. You normally only see it in one in top 8. This is the first time Lantern Control has taken first place, to my knowledge, in a while. And because of that, Wizards is looking at the deck and it's going to pay attention to it, but I don't think they're finding a need to ban anything for it just yet. But that being said, I had 4 people talk to me and say 4 cards need to get banned. The 4 cards are, and you may or may not agree with this, Ensnaring Bridge, Ancient Stirrings, Whirl of Invention, and Mox Opal. So let me knock 2 cards off this list for you right away. A lot of people hate free mana, but Mox Opal is very hard to enable, and there are only 2 decks that can utilize it. This and Affinity. And because Mox Opal is played in Affinity, and they don't want to ding Affinity until Affinity has another card that they could utilize in their deck, they're not going to get rid of Mox Opal. I'm going to tell you that right now. The same thing with Ancient Stirrings. They're not going to get rid of that card because Tron uses it, and Tron needs it as a filtration piece. So they're not going to ban those two cards. That leaves Ensnaring Bridge, and that leaves Whirl of Invention. So Ensnaring Bridge is kind of splashed all over the place, and you could argue that some replacement cards for this card would be like Ghostly Prison or other cards to that nature, but there is also an argument that if you ban Ensnaring Bridge, you kind of destroy the deck, and I'm on the fence about that one. I would love to see the deck possibly play Ghostly Prison or possibly play some other cards. So I think there may be an argument for Ensnaring Bridge, but a lot of people are saying that if you ban Ensnaring Bridge, you destroy the deck, and that is a distinct possibility. So that kind of leaves one spot open to ban, and that is Whirl of Invention. So with Whirl of Invention, there are two decks, to my knowledge, that utilize that card. And surprisingly enough, it's not Affinity. It's Karklan Ironworks and this. So Karklan Ironworks, I'm not going to get into that deck. It's probably a tier 2, tier 2.5 deck, but because that deck uses Whirl of Invention, and this tier 1 deck uses Whirl of Invention, if you ban Whirl of Invention, not a lot of decks are going to get affected by this. They can no longer instantly search out their 1-drop or their Ensnaring Bridge or whatever. They're forced to play something else. They're forced to play a piece of removal. They're forced to play a piece of recursion, something to that extent. The card you can compare this to is Court of Calling, because they arguably do the same thing. The downside is the card strong enough to make it onto the ban list? And it's one of those cards that, because only one deck plays it and then another niche deck plays it, you can make an argument that it's not strong enough to make it on the ban list. But if they eventually need to ban something, then this card may be the card they need to ban without affecting the whole of the modern format, without either A, killing a deck, or B, banning a card that may or may not kill two potential decks. So keep that in mind, that Whirl of Invention, I think, is the card you want to target overall for Lantern Control. The other two decks I kind of want to talk about simultaneously in this top 8 are the Pyromancer decks, quote-unquote. So the first one I want to hit up is the Mardu Pyromancer deck. With that, you're going to drop a Pyromancer when you're able to control the board. So the Mardu version utilizes a bunch of hand disruption and a bunch of kill spells, Lightning Bolt, Colgan's Command, Liliana's, and stuff like that. They're going to drop the Young Pyromancer when they can control the field and they can protect the Young Pyromancer, because that is their main win con. Without the Pyromancer, they can't put out enough creatures to swing and kill you. But what they can do is they can refill their hand with the Bedlam Revelers that they run in the deck as a 4 of, and have that as a possible alternate win con. Because the card also has prowess, it can become strong enough that it becomes a 7-8 or whatever, and then they're able to swing with a 7-8 for a win. Plus, it's able to draw them cards. It's able to draw them 3 cards or whatever they need to at that given time. So it does refuel them. It does something that red does not have very much of, and that's the ability to refuel. So when it comes to removal as a whole, I mentioned already, just like Lightning Bolt, Colgan's Command, they're also utilizing hand disruption in the form of Collective Brutalities, Thought Seizes, Inquisitions of Kozilek, so you see how the deck is able to manipulate things. And as I mentioned before, they're running Liliana's in there, so it's able to make you sacrifice a creature, make you discard a card, something to that extent. Compare that to the blue-red version of this deck. It's a very similar concept, except instead of kill spells, with the exception of just like a few minor burn spells like Lightning Bolt and Electrolyze, they're mainly just countering your stuff. They're mainly going Monolith, Cryptic Command, Logic Knot, whatever they need to counter your stuff, get more creatures out into the field, draw more cards, and win via that way. But they're also, just like the Mardu version, they're utilizing an alternate win con. But their alternate win con is a 3 of Thing in the Ice. And just like Bedlam Reveler, it can become a 7-8. The problem with this deck is it's not particularly synergistic with the Pyromancer. Because if I cast 4 spells, I now have 4 triggers on the Thing of the Ice. Yes, I just put out a bunch of tokens, but all those tokens and the Young Pyromancer are bounced. And now I just have a 7-8 on the field. And granted, just a 7-8 is in quotes here. Because a flip Thing in the Ice is an immense 2-drop, but it doesn't necessarily synergize as well. So you got to be real careful in what situations you play the Thing in the Ice. Otherwise, you're going to find yourself losing board state, and you don't necessarily want to do that. The deck is also utilizing Snapcaster as a way just to recur counters and a way to recur burn, which is very smart. And overall, the decks I think, have a very good competition. The Pyromancer decks were a very big surprise to me. I didn't think Pyromancer had a chance to really make a comeback in Modern, so it's very interesting to see this card come back kind of out of left field. It did hit me at that time, and I was rather surprised seeing, oh, hey, there are a couple of Pyromancer lists here. That's odd. But that just goes to show you can never be 100% accurate with what you think is going to be in Modern when it comes to the Pro Tour, at least. The pros will always surprise you, and these, for all we know, might have surprised other pros. But that also goes to show you that it's up to you how you run your deck and how well you know the deck before you can make adjustments, before you can go and win major tournaments. You need to know your deck. And I'm sure these two pros who made the Pyromancer decks knew their decks, and they knew the meta that they were going into. They knew how their matchups were going to be. And that is 100% key when you go into GPs and when you go into pro status events. You got to know your meta. You got to know who's playing what or what estimation of there is before you can make the adjustments, before you can go off and know how to play X against Y. The last two events I want to hit briefly are CLM 10 Modern and GP Toronto. So I'm not going to really go over the deck list per se. I'm just going to go over the top eight because they are kind of not generic top eight, but they are kind of what we expected in the top eight for a modern GP or a modern big event like CLM 10. So for CLM 10, again, 1 through 8, you have Red Green Titan Shift, Black White Eldrazi and Taxes, Elves, Revolt Zoo, Affinity, Burn, Counters Company, and Mono White Taxes. The only interesting deck there is kind of the Revolt Zoo, but it's just a slower version, I think, of Zoo because it forces you to attack first before you can go off and just lay all these Revolt cards for potential value. Then looking at GP Toronto, you have Bogles, Burn, Instant Reanimator, Jeskai Control, Affinity, Burn, Elves, and Traverse Shadow. Again, there you see Bogles taking first place, which is rather unexpected. Bogles has not made first in quite some time, I think, or the top eight in quite some time, really, when I think about it. But it's good to see that this person was able to make it to the top eight at GP Toronto, and it's good to see that Bogles still has some way to go in Modern. It still has quite a bit of headway just there. I will say, I think the only real major change to the Bogles list that they did was Leyline of Sanctity's main. I'm not sure how I necessarily feel about that. It does stop Hand Disruption main, it does stop Burn. If they're able to just mulligan till they get down to a Leyline of Sanctity against Burn game one, Burn kind of auto-scoops. And you could say the same thing for Grixis, Death Shadow, or anything like that. Now their Burn's useless and their Hand Disruption's useless. They're forced to just kind of target themselves. So overall, the Bogles list was rather solid, and I'm excited to see Bogles in the top eight. Finally, the last thing I want to hit on is my experience at GP Houston. I know that was some time ago. If you didn't know, GP Houston was sealed. It wasn't that great of an event for me personally. I do consider myself a very good player when it comes to sealed, but my seal pool was just awful. You could be the best seal player in the world, but if you are not given a halfway decent pool to make, then you're kind of stuck being in a bad situation. Unfortunately, I was stuck in a bad situation. I just was not feeling my deck. There was no way about it. I had no options. I had two rare merfolk, but in the pool that I was given, I had only four merfolk total. I had Hadama's Climb, but that was about it. That's not really enough to go off of for blue, especially when the two good merfolk you got are the one of the merfolk lords that puts counters, and the other ones, whenever merfolk is unblocked, you draw a card, but you have no way of making your merfolk unblockable. So there wasn't a real desire for me to play merfolk, even with the Hadama's Climb in there. So I was kind of stuck playing dinos. And normally that's not a bad thing, but the rares I kind of had for dinos were mediocre at best. I had Fixation in Rootbound Crag, which is okay. I had Whatley Radiant Champion. Now, if you're familiar with that Whatley, compare that to the other Whatley, compare that to Angrath, and compare that to Vraska and Jace. If you look at the five walkers that we currently have out of the Ixalan block, I think it's safe to say that when it comes to sealed, Whatley Radiant Champion is the worst out of those walkers. Jace comes down turn three, and he can start drawing you cards or protect himself. Vraska is an auto-win when she is able to ult, and plus she's also able to protect herself. Angrath's able to steal your cards or make sure that you take two every turn and deal a lot more damage. The other Whatley is also able to make sure that she's able to protect herself, make your stuff unblockable. So overall, just looking at those four walkers, they're a lot better. Whatley overall compared to those cards is just a bad card. Her plus one is going to put X plus one loyalty counters on her, which sounds okay. It sounds like it's going to ramp you to something. But the problem is not only do you have to have a board state, but ramping her doesn't really do much. Because her minus one is, again, something that you're required to have a board state for. It's going to give target creature plus X, where X is the number of creatures you control. It doesn't really give trample, it doesn't give hexproof, it doesn't give haste, it just gives plus X. So you're thinking, well, her ult's got to be really good. But it's not. It's minus 8. Anytime a creature enters the battlefield under your control, you draw a card. And sometimes in sealed, it's great to draw cards. But again, with this particular Whatley, it's just not. And those were the two cards I was forced to go into with Naya Dinosaurs. And Naya Dinosaurs is okay. When it comes down to it, I think the power ranks are, if you have the Merfolk support, I think Merfolk support is probably top tier. Second tier, when it comes to sealed, is Vampires, if you have the support for it. Third tier is Dinosaurs, if you have to. And then bottom tier, I think, is Pirates. And that's tricolor Pirates, because there are some variants that you can do a mono green dinosaurs or red green dinosaurs or red black pirates in there. There's a lot of variants, so obviously that's just me making a generalization. But that's kind of where I'm sitting right now, is when it comes to Ixalan, those are my sealed statuses and what I prefer to do and what I prefer not to do. And so I'm stuck with these kind of two cards in my Naya Dinosaurs pool. And I had a lot of dinosaurs, but I didn't really have a way to cheat them out or give them haste, so I was kind of just playing on-curve dinosaurs with Whatley and a little bit of fixation, so it wasn't that great of sealed for me. I think the top of my curve was 5. I didn't even get... they reprinted that stupid 6-6 with trample for 6, and I didn't even get one. So I'm relying on the top of my curve being 5-drop dinos, trying to get there, running some enchantments that give them lifelink and praying to God things work. I lose round 1, win round 2, lose round 3, and I know I can keep going, and I pretty much have to win out the rest of the day, but I just didn't feel it. I wasn't feeling the deck, and sometimes you just don't feel things, and so I dropped. I dropped at round 3 and decided to play side events. So for side events, I played Legacy a lot, I played Modern a lot, and I managed to do quite well in the Legacy side events, win outright day 2 side events for Legacy, and I think accumulate 500, 600 tickets, something like that. So I got quite a bit with my prizes. When it comes to Legacy, also I was playing Legacy with a friend. And I'm not going to give away his particular strategy, but I will say that he managed to tilt quite a few players. He was playing a version of Mono Red Control for Legacy, and it was doing quite well. In fact, I'm going to get his deck list, hopefully, and talk to you guys about it. But if you're interested in possibly a new Legacy deck that will tilt your opponent, Mono Red Control, at least his variant of it, is rather hilarious. For Legacy, what I was playing was Eldrazi. Nothing too fancy, but there weren't a lot of decks that were able to do anything about it, so I managed to do quite well in the Legacy side events, and so I was rather happy with the outcome. Overall, I had a great experience at GP Houston. I've had a great few weeks getting again back into the swing of school and all that good stuff, so thank you again for listening, and thank you for being patient with me. I know the waiting period between podcasts may be off for a couple of weeks before things get back into order. I'm going to try to put out as many podcasts as I can, but with my busy schedule, I need to make sure that I study and I do well for school. And so the podcast is kind of not on the back burner, but it's near the back burner. It's kind of sharing a plate with it right now. And so I'm still going to be playing Magic. If you're interested again in keeping up with me, please follow me at MTG Eternities on Twitter. I post relatively frequently. I talk, stuff like that. You'll see more from MTG Eternities at Twitter than you probably will see from me in the podcast for a little while at least. Again, you could find me on YouTube, MTG Eternities. I'm always there. I read the comments frequently if you leave comments, stuff like that. And hopefully you guys have a great couple of weeks. When it comes to this weekend, hopefully we see some relatively interesting things when it comes to the new GPs that are happening this weekend. I know I'll be keeping my eye on it. And if something incredibly interesting happens and I find myself with a bit more free time this upcoming week, I'll make another podcast. So until next time, just remember, all lines of thought are open for all magic seekers. This is your host from MTG Eternities, signing out.